Good morning, and welcome to Lopes on Movies. My name is Joey Lopes, and today I'm joined by Connor.
Good morning.
What's going on, Connor? How you feeling?
Hey, I'm feeling pretty good. How are you?
Pretty good, I guess. Yeah. You know, I had a very early day today at work. I was in at 7 a.m. So my sleep is a little bit weird today because, you know, obviously when I got home, I took a nap because I was exhausted. And I think I napped for a little too long. So I'm hoping that I'm not up all night tonight. But you know,
that was a mistake.
We'll
see. What you should have done is just stayed awake the whole time.
I know, but like, man, I was tired. You know, I was just itching to go to sleep, and I did, and it was great, but it was long. That has hurt me in the past. So, you know, I guess time will tell. But for now, I'm not going to worry about it, and I'm just going to enjoy the lovely ritual that we have every week of talking about the movies. But before we get to the movie we're going to talk about today, I guess this qualifies as movie news on some level, but really it's more just like a very minor debate that's been floating around on Twitter. And I find it an interesting question, so I kind of want to talk about it just a little bit. So Dune 2 is coming out soon, or is it Dune Part 2?
Dune 2!
Whatever it is, that's the new Dune sequel from director Denis Villeneuve. And I feel like we've talked about Denis Villeneuve on the show before, more than just Dune. But as a director, you described him as
your favorite director that's never made a good movie.
I don't think I've ever said that, but that sounds like a it's, you know, I guess that sounds okay. It's a little bit I don't know, it's too cute. I probably wouldn't come up with anything that like that. But I will say that I'm not a huge fan of Denis Villeneuve. I'm trying to think of like what my favorite Denis Villeneuve movie is, and like which ones I actually like. I feel like my favorite one is Enemy, maybe. Maybe the first Sicario, but even the first Sicario, I was kind of like, not totally about it. Like, it's a gorgeous movie, but it's not, I don't know, it didn't really do it for me.
His movies look very good, yeah.
He's definitely an interesting, you know, at least in terms of, like, the big budget kind of filmmakers of the day. He's one of the more interesting ones. I just think that a lot of the movies he's made have a lot of annoying problems, or at least things that just like don't really resonate with me that much. Like Arrival didn't do it for either of us.
Or annoying actors. I'm looking at you, Jared Leto.
Blade Runner 2049. That didn't do it for me either, man. Like I don't know. Just like I feel like there's a little bit of a disconnect here. But nevertheless, I do think that he's an interesting filmmaker, and I'm interested in hearing what he has to say every so often. And recently, something that he had to say in an interview has caused some a little bit of debate. So I kind of want to talk about this a little bit. So here's what he said in this interview, I think with the London Times or something. And this is a Variety reporting on this, and their kind of summary. So he says that movies have been corrupted by television. Okay, so that's how he opens. Okay, and this is what he says. Frankly, I hate dialogue. Dialogue is for theater and television. I don't remember movies because of a good line. I remember movies because of a strong image. I'm not interested in dialogue at all. Pure image and sound, that is the power of cinema, but it is something not obvious when you watch movies today. Movies have been corrupted by television. In a perfect world, I'd make a compelling movie that doesn't feel like an experiment, but does not have a single word in it either. People would leave the cinema and say, wait, there was no dialogue, but they won't feel the lack. Wait, there was no dialogue? Like, they won't get it. They won't even realize there was no dialogue because they were so into it. That's basically what he's saying. So that's, like, the main crux of the quote. I'm curious what you think about this, Connor, because this has definitely ignited some passionate opinions across Twitter over the past couple days.
So I haven't heard that until just now. I kind of agree, sort of. I mean, I don't think that you need no dialogue, but I do believe in that there's something more to film where it's the the visual spectacle with the large sound and score and, you know, a contained story that has a beginning and end. I think that's the part that he missed is that, because I guess his movies don't do that all the time. They're kind of like, they're, you know, chapters like Dune is part one, part two, so no beginning and end, you know, whatever. I can understand that, especially like the way TV is now, which is just all TV seems to just be the serialized style where it's a, you know, constant, you know, ongoing story that never really ends, and a show just kind of has they make it up every season is different, sort of. They have maybe like a loose idea of where the story is going to go at the end, but you know, it's not all there. But it is more talking, a lot of just shot, reverse shot of, you know, the, usually the cast is you know, smaller, I would guess, I would say also, really. Yeah, I think I understand some of that. What do you make of this this whole thing?
I mean, I'm sympathetic to what he's saying here. But I guess my take on it is that I don't think dialogue is really the issue specifically, and I don't think dialogue is the thing that really, like, not specifically dialogue that separates like film from theater and television. I'm actually like the first place that I heard the idea of TV being primarily a writer's medium and a dialogue driven medium more so than film was in a Professor Leach class, our film professor here at UD. And when I started thinking about it, it made a lot of sense, because he mentioned something about like when people are watching TV, right, they'll often be doing other things while they're watching, but they'll turn the volume all the way up so they can hear what's happening, and they're getting the story and everything that's going on primarily through the dialogue, right? Whereas in a movie, that's not typically the experience, and it's not an experience that filmmakers ever used to have to account for, because the idea was that people are watching this in a theater, right? So when you're watching something in a theater, you're not going to be distracted by other things, theoretically. At least in the old days, that was true. But when you're watching something in a theater, you're there specifically for the experience. So there was no need to have dialogue be something that is driving the understanding of the narrative forward. So just by the format of it, you're more encouraged to tell the story in a more visual way, which is what the real history of cinema is. So I understand what he's saying here, which is the idea that, like, I just don't think that it's specifically because of the medium of television that movies are like this. I think it's because of the expectation that movies will be watched not just in theaters anymore. And because of that expectation, there's more of a insistence, I assume, on the producers and the writers and directors to try to tell more of the story through dialogue, because they are assuming that people are going to be watching this while they're doing other things. And it's much easier to multitask with your ears while your eyes are doing something else than it is to like have your eyes glued to a screen and pay attention to what the visual storytelling is, which is how it would have been in a situation when you were just doing theatrical exhibition, right? So, and the reason that I want to point that out is because I think dialogue is great, and some of the best movies are very dialogue-driven, but not necessarily entirely dialogue-driven. Like that, and that's, I think, the distinction here, because like I would never tell like Quentin Tarantino to not put dialogue in his movies, because dialogue is not a movie thing, right? Like Quentin Tarantino dialogue just is great, and yeah, you would never want to watch want to watch like Pulp Fiction without that Quentin Tarantino dialogue. But obviously dialogue is not the only thing going on there, and you probably wouldn't watch Pulp Fiction out of the corner of your eye while you're making dinner or whatever, right? Because the dialogue is good, but it's still not the experience of watching Pulp Fiction. Whereas like if you're watching a sitcom on TV, you don't really like it's the image is not as important to the storytelling. It's not as core to the storytelling. It is just like, you know, and even in like the serialized dramas that we have that are like supposedly more cinematic, like things like Game of Thrones, like 95% of that show is two people in a room in shot, reverse shot, talking to each other.
Right.
Right. Yeah. And there's so much story that's being delivered and so much backstory and lore or whatever that like, you really don't have to pay attention to the image at all in any of those talking scenes for the most part. Like there's a handful of them that do interesting things with the image, but a lot of them really don't. So to me, it's mostly that as the priority of the storytelling, being whether it's a dialogue focus or an image focus is the distinction. And yeah, I mean, I'm sympathetic to that because I think that there's a lot more interesting things you can do with visual storytelling and music as well in movies. And the combination of that with the image, I think, is the most powerful thing that a movie can do. So to me, it's like, you know, my favorite movies are definitely movies that you're looking at them, and what you're watching and hearing and paying full close attention to is what's really, really like selling it and what's making it so beautiful, like a Sergio Leone movie or something, where the like everything is just working in tandem to tell just this overwhelming emotional storyline. Whereas TV, I think, very much is more, it's almost more novel-esque. Like it's the things it's the words that matter more so than the image. And so yeah, that's kind of my thought on it. And I definitely agree that I would prefer if we continued to have that distinction, because I really appreciate what can be done with visual storytelling in movies, and the idea of giving a movie your full attention allows the filmmakers to do more kinds of storytelling with the image and more subtle kinds of storytelling that rely on you actually paying attention to what you're looking at.
Right.
But yeah, that's you know, that's kind of where I'm at on it. I just think it's an interesting philosophical debate. I'd be curious what other people think.
Yeah, no, I get it. Maybe you should bring Professor Leach back for a show. It's been a while, right?
Yeah, I should, actually. I could ask him about that, and it has been a little while. Well, all right, let's talk about the movie we're going to talk about today. So me and you both saw this movie, which is Japan's entry for Best International Film at the Oscars this year. And it's a movie called Perfect Days. So do you have the synopsis for Perfect Days, Connor?
I can get it.
Let's do it.
Okay, okay. I got it. Perfect Days, directed by Wim Wenders. A janitor in Japan drives between jobs listening to rock music, is the IMDb description.
That's the IMDb description? I kind of love that. That actually owns. That's great.
Yeah, I do like the simplification of the description there. I think it kind of fits with the movie, too. And it stars Koji Yakusho in the lead role.
The lead role. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. I think I've only seen him in one other movie, which is Cure, which I think we might have talked about on the show. I have a vague memory of talking about Cure on the show.
Joey, first, have you ever seen a movie directed by Wim Wenders?
No, I haven't, but I know that he's one of those, like, I guess, art house director types that I've been aware of for a very, very long time, but I just, for some reason, never seen one of the movies. I mean, I think Paris, Texas is like his most well-known movie.
That's the one that I continually, with all the like movie apps and things, get recommended to watch, because I think it probably just fits a lot of the things that I like, and it's also stars Harry Dean Stanton, I haven't seen it, but I would definitely like to.
I know, yeah, see, it's one of those things that's just only a matter of time. Like, I'm going to watch Paris, Texas eventually. I just haven't yet.
Right. Yeah, so he's been around for a long time. So, Joey, what do you think of Perfect Days?
Well, I will say that the IMDb synopsis, I'm glad that it captures one of the things that, like, I will continually think about this movie, which is that, man, he has great taste in music, this main character. Like phenomenal taste in music. Like every time he would put on a new cassette, I was like, yeah, all right, let's go. Yeah, it's just, you know, I really like this movie. I think this is a wonderful little movie. It's interesting because I thought a lot about the structure of it and the way that it tells its story. I think it's very clever for what the kind of, it's very of a piece with like thematically what the movie's about, which before the movie actually Wim Wenders and Koji Yakusho give like a little like you know, thank you for coming to the theater to watch this movie. This is what the kind of what we wanted to do. And I think that Wender says something like, you know, it's a movie about, you know, the virtues of living a simple life, right? And I think the way the movie is structured really, really accentuates that, because it's basically a 2-ish weeks or so in this man's life, and we, for the most part, see all of the events of each day, not literally the amount of time, but all of the important events that happen in each day. And it's just one day after the other. We see him, he wakes up, he does his thing, goes through the day, he goes to sleep. We get a little dream of him reflecting on the day in black and white, and then the next day, and then repeat over and over and over and over again until the end of the movie, basically. And I feel like this routine that the movie gets into as you start watching it really, really accentuates this idea of a person living a simple life and appreciating the little things in life, and just kind of the just appreciating every moment of the day. And it, because you get into this rhythm of paying attention to so much of the minutiae of his day, you start to kind of see things in the same way that he would see things, of just appreciating all of the little things that happen during the days, and how each day is slightly different from the last, and the little adventures and storylines that he wanders into. And it's just a very relaxing experience. Like I was, by the end, I was ready for it to continue going, but it just ends, and I'm like, oh man, I could have had a few more days of this, because I love seeing this guy experience life. You know, like it's great.
There's something so like warm and just settling about his existence, the beauty that he finds in his daily routine, mm-hmm. no matter how simple it is, and the way mm-hmm. he's able to like just touch the people that are around him, like his, by doing just his daily routine of waking up and going to the various like mm-hmm. you know, toilets that he cleans, just to, you know, he cleans public toilets is what
that's his job. Yeah.
Is what he does. He the company's called the Tokyo Toilet. And he goes around in his car listening to music, and he goes from place to place, interacts with his coworkers. One, you know, like a mm-hmm. like a kid who's just kind of, you know, just doing it for money. And the one thing that's too about him is that he's so good at his job too. Like,
oh yeah, he takes it very, very seriously. Yeah.
He does, and then the kid is even going to him like, why are you working so hard at this? Like you're cleaning toilets, but he has this like respect for the work and respect for what he does and respect for mm-hmm. his time. And but his time is valuable to him, like mm-hmm. to where if you know he doesn't want to do more work or do above what he's supposed to do, he does what he does his time perfectly. There's one moment where the kid like doesn't show up, and he's like, you know, I'll cover for you one day, but that's it. You know, he gets annoyed by it because he has his routine that he loves. Mm-hmm. You know, he goes and they become part of his life. Like everybody mm-hmm. knows him. Like he goes to mm-hmm. to a bar and they come to him and say, "Oh, for all your hard work." And then they give him his food. He watches baseball mm-hmm. on mm-hmm. The TV. You know, goes home, reads his book, and then goes to bed. And then he's woken up by the old lady who's like raking sweeping. The leaves. Yeah. Like and he loves it, and that's his routine like every single day. Yeah. And it's you fall in love with it too, and you are
exactly
you're into it, and then like and then when there's these, you know, disruptions, it's kind of cool to see the way that he kind of reacts. And he's mm-hmm. he's a very soft-spoken guy who really doesn't speak much at all, which I think mm-hmm. there's something to it too, where there's you get a little bit more in his backstory through his niece who comes to, mm-hmm. Who kind of like, I guess, runs away from home, just like temporarily goes to, mm-hmm. to stay with him. You know, you can perceive that she, you know, she's got, doesn't love what's going on or something
in her home,
just
yeah.
runs away, to go see him. And you can see that clearly something must have happened in his life, because he, mm-hmm. His sister, who is, you know, his niece's mother, is mm-hmm. is very well off. It you get
very,
the
very
impression
wealthy, yeah.
off, and she's kind of like dismissive, or not dismissive, but just, I don't want to say she looks down on him either, but just kind of like, this is what you're doing. This is where you live. Mm-hmm. But and mm-hmm. and like, and he's like, yeah, and he but he seems happy, but mm-hmm. clearly there's a trouble that happened in his past, you know, that this life that he's kind of woven for himself keeps him at peace. And you can really see the beauty that he gets from just eating his lunch and like and looking up at the trees and taking the same picture at the trees every day to get like the perfect, like, you know, shot. And then it's, I mean, I'm glad that you liked the movie. I was a little worried you weren't going to like it. I'm not going to lie, but I thought this movie was tremendous.
Well, I think the important thing and the reason why it's good is that when you describe it, I feel like you could very easily make it sound kind of saccharine or like annoying. You know what I mean? We're like, I almost feel like I could see the bad version of this movie where he's like this guy who's like given lessons along the way about life because, you know, he's like an older guy and like the people he encounter, he bestows his wisdom upon them, or it being like really, really, really like I said, saccharine or something, but really it's not. Like, it's very grounded. And it's also not just a pleasant meander, I feel like. Like, I think people could probably like come away from this feeling like it is, but there's a lot of stories happening in this. Like, it's not like there's no story. Like, there are a ton of these like little micro narratives happening, and all of them have really distinct payoffs. Like, there's actually like, by the end of the movie, I feel like a lot of these little narratives that have been kind of like percolating through the people he encounters all feel resolved in some way. And there are some, there's some lingering things too, but it's definitely, there is like a genuine like story underneath all of the minutiae. And that's what I think makes it really powerful. But yeah, I mean, it's an incredible lead performance from Koji Yakusho. Like, he's, it's I think that I watched a thing with Wim Wenders talking about how the movie was nominated as Japan's entry, and he was like, yeah, it's just because Japan loves this guy. They love Koji Yakusho, you know. It's basically like it's all about him. It's their love for him and what he's done for Japanese cinema, and you know, this being such a strong role for him, I think that they just felt, yeah, this is, you know, almost like as a matter of respect, it's like, yeah, we gotta make this the entry for Japan. But yeah, I mean, he does some really tremendous stuff in this movie, especially at the very end. There's like, it's almost like it's a third to last shot, second to last shot or something. Like, and not to give anything away, but I just think he's doing some really, really tremendous stuff here. Playing a character that it's mostly, and you know, we were talking about dialogue before. He's, like you said, he's very soft spoken. So most of the performance is very, very much in his body language and his expressions. And he's selling this character in such an incredible way that you find him just so endearing, and you really, you know, you get completely into his world in a way that's really, really fascinating. So yeah, just incredible in that way. And also, I like his niece a lot too. I think that a lot of my favorite parts of the movie are in that middle section when he's with her. That adds an interesting element into his life. But yeah, it's you know, it's a very quietly emotional movie. You know, it kind of sneaks up on you, I feel like, because of
it's very emotional.
Yeah,
just like just the way his performance is. I saw another thing from Wenders that the movie, when he was directing, it kind of felt like a documentary of a fictional person for him.
Sure,
like the way it was like filmed, like just going through his day and just how like perfectly realized this character is, you know. Just you get so much of this guy and feel like you know him through all of these different interactions, and you know, and what's so masterful is you really feel like you know all of the like little characters that show up throughout it. And their personalities, even just from the way they interact with him and how they treat him, you know, like while he's cleaning the toilets, for example, like there's the people that will, you know, be kind to him, or like, or you know, like, oh, sorry, just one minute, sorry, like, like, and then he'll step aside, and then he'll use it. And he's playing tic-tac-toe with on a piece of paper, and then like with someone who's like, you know, hiding it in the toilet. Mm-hmm. I don't know. I think it's just
there's
great.
So many little things going on throughout the movie. Like that's why I say like I could see people coming away from this being like there's no story, but there very much is. But there's like a million stories. There's so much depth to this and how each day intersects and how all of these stories intersect with each other and everything. And even though it is just very much this very very like specific portrait of these days in this character's life. There are tons and tons of these little narratives that are going on all the time. And by the end, it really, really hits you, especially like the accumulation of everything this man has experienced over the past, 2 weeks or whatever it is in the timeline of the movie is really, really powerful. So yeah, I really did love it. Like once you settle into its rhythm, like it's just a absolutely wonderful thing to just chill with and enjoy and appreciate the many layers to the storytelling
and the fantastic needle drop soundtrack, you know. And
this, yeah, well, that's the funny thing about the soundtrack is like this a while ago I did this video with some people talking about how the Beatles influenced a lot of like video game music, and this sounds like a tangent, but I swear I'll make this make sense. The basic point is that a lot of like Western popular music was extremely popular in Japan for people of that generation. So like this character is older, so this would have been like he would have been in that generation that was really 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 influenced by a lot of American and just Western music in general. So that's really where a lot of his taste is. So much of his music is like 60s 70s rock or you know stuff like that. Like Lou Reed is a really big, you know, big one in the movie for obvious reasons. I mean, the movie is probably named on some level for the Lou Reed song, Perfect Day. But like, so I just think that's interesting that that's like such a strong point of his character, and actually really does a good job like making him seem like a character of that generation, you know?
Mm-hmm. And I don't think we talked much about it, but now that we're basically at the end. It also is shot so well. I love the way that it's like all, I think it's all natural light of Tokyo as well.
Oh yeah.
Yeah. Which is pretty great. And I love the shots of him just like riding his bike along. Like just, I thought the movie's great. I think that also does a good job of like really getting you into the movie too. Just the way it's shot and how great every single scene looks.
Yeah.
I mean, it's great. I want to see it again. It's crazy. Like, this, like, I know everything happens in it, but I just want to get back into that, like, feeling and mode, you know?
It's just such a perfectly realized 2 weeks of a person's life, you know? Like, it's just, it really just feels completely, I don't even know the word for it. It's just, I had the same feeling. While I was watching it, I was thinking, like, man, I could put this on anytime and just get into this world.
I want to like take something, but I also like, I want to like take something from it and like add it to my life. You know,
sure,
like
yeah.
How can I get like something like this? But yeah, great movie.
Absolutely.
Go see Perfect Days.
Yeah, I think, well, I went down to the beach at Lewis to see it. I don't know if it's playing anywhere nearby, like the Northern Delaware area, but if you get the chance to see it, definitely, definitely check it out. Maybe check it out on video or, you know, on your TV streaming whenever it eventually drops on streaming. But, you know, respect for the medium of the cinema, like Denis Villeneuve would want you to, you know, don't walk away from the screen and turn up the dialogue because you probably won't get it. You do that. This is probably a movie that's better to pay attention to.
You can get back to watching Suits later or whatever.
Yeah, exactly.
Like just watch.
Dude,
this
everybody, like the Zoomers love Suits. It's crazy.
I mean,
we don't have any time to talk about this, but
we don't have
it's
any
true
time about it, but yes, I used to love Suits also, by the way. Like I wanted to go to law school thinking that I could be like Suits.
Yeah, but, you were gonna be Harvey. Anyway, yeah. We'll see you next week.